We Are SC podcast for Tuesday, November 18th, and it is UCLA week. You don't get much bigger than that for the USC Trojans. Gary Pasquitz joined, as always, by Jeremy Hogue and Mike Lamb. Guys, before we get forward, moving forward and talking about this UCLA game, which is setting up absolutely wonderfully, to be just a big-time football game. We're going to have to go back a couple days and talk about the Cal game, a victory for the Trojans, 38-30, last Thursday night, and a rare Thursday night game. But I want to get your guys' thoughts on that game. Really a tale of two different halves, USC going up 31-2 in that game at one point, and then having to hang on at the end, 38-30, where basically, you know, Cal was kicking an onside kick with a minute left to try to tie the football game. So let's just get your thoughts on what went down in that game. Mike, go ahead and get us started.
I'm a little bit disconcerted by what is becoming the Trojans' prevent offense that they're running in the second half. I don't understand it. You just pointed it out. You're up 31-2, and you score one more touchdown in the second half, and you know that's just maybe because Cody Kessler is able to figure out something or see something, and to me that's been kind of a pattern, that's been kind of a theme that's been happening in these games where the Trojans get into trouble, and I don't know whether it's the play calling gets conservative. I don't know if the players kind of exhale and think that they've got the thing handled, and then they put the pressure on the defense. The other thing that I want to bring the point up, I'm not big on making excuses, but I know the defensive line's a little thin, and I know it's tough to get a pass rush, and I understand that, and I thought that was part of the case of what happened with Cal as well, but I don't think it's as simple as pointing the fingers at the defense and saying, you guys aren't closing out games. I think the offense has a bigger problem closing out games than the defense.
I would agree with you, Mike. You and I both use that term, prevent offense, and I think it goes to what you and I both sense, which is this is not just a defensive problem. I mean, you definitely, teams are scoring more points as tail end of games, can happen. I mean, over the course of a game, you start out lights out on defense, and over the course of a game, offensive coordinators start to figure out and adjust to what you're doing, and they can make some things happen and start making plays. Clearly, that happened with Cal, and it was right at the tail end of the second quarter, and then, pretty much the entire second half. And, but again, it's like you said, we were up 31-2. And at one point in this game, at what point does our offense not shut down and pull the reins back and sort of try to slow down this game as opposed to, push the accelerator, put your foot on their throat, and let's have some killer instinct and crush these guys. And we just haven't seen it all year. And it's as much of an offensive issue, I believe, as it is a defensive issue. And it's something to keep an eye on in these last 2 weeks where we're going to be playing dramatically better teams than we've played over the last three or four.
And Jeremy, I think that's the key point for this one. It's almost as if this is a whole separate season right now. Okay, you're 7-3 through your first 10 games. That is what it is. But through a quirk of what has happened with the Pac-12 South this year, there's still a chance for the Trojans to get into that Pac-12 title game. A victory over the Bruins on Saturday, and if ASU loses one of their last two games here at the end, and the Trojans are in, that's incredible right now to me. But it's reality. But not only do you have that, but it's UCLA. It's Notre Dame. And I think you hit it on the head, Jeremy. This issue that has been there, which has seeming to be there all season long, that can't show up against the Bruins and against Notre Dame. I think the interesting thing, I heard you guys use the phrase prevent offense. Mike, let's come to you. When you see what's going on with this, is there a hesitation? Is it just a matter of game planning of what's going on? But it seems to me when you've got a quarterback, a tailback, and a receiver who have been as productive as these three have been at times, that's a lot in your holster when you're going into this game.
I have my suspicions about what are going on, but I can't confirm my suspicions. This is one thing that I do know. I don't want to get too much into the good old days and of USC football, but something that I saw from Pete Carroll's teams that won the championships and did what they did, usually pretty vanilla in the first half, and then kind of came out with what they really had for you in the second half. You know, they were much closer to a base defense than what they were going to come up with in the second half. And so to go back to Jeremy's point about if somebody else is adjusting to you, you know, did you show all your cards in the first half? You know, did you show them everything that you've got, and then they adjusted to you and they're able to shut you down and score on you? If you do that against UCLA, and if you do that against Notre Dame, you'll get beat. I mean, I don't think there's really any hesitation in thinking that type of thing is going to happen. So, you know, part of the growth process of this team and this staff, I think, would be to discover, you know, that you've got a shortcoming there and that you've got to do it. I don't know if it's on Steve Sarkisian and what's happening with the offense, but he has been, you know, he has admitted that, you know, there have been times when he had things to do over again, he would do them differently. I hope he has learned from what has happened here in this. And if they are showing everything they've got in the first half, keep something in reserve. Keep something in reserve, because you have not been a team that has exactly dominated the fourth quarter against good opponents.
Yeah, I mean, it jumps off. I'll tell you, you and I are football analysts. My wife on Saturday, the Saturday of the Cal game, is like, didn't we used to always dominate the second half when Pete Carroll was here? And it's exactly the point you made, Mike, which was we'd go in, we'd turn things around. I remember asking Ed Orgeron and others about it. It's like, what are you guys doing there at halftime? I mean, all of a sudden, this team comes out, and it absolutely shuts teams down. If we were close at halftime, you knew we were going to win. Whereas now, we've got huge leads at halftime, and we have no faith that we're going to win. It's like, you know, what's wrong with this picture? And I agree with you on that front. I'll just go back to sort of Gary's comments about, you know, don't we have the talent on offense to sort of make this work and use these guys better and pull away from teams in the second half? You know, the one thing I will say that concerns me, watching these last two games, even Washington State and Cal, two teams that are not exactly top of the pack, our offensive line really did not have much of a running game. And we talked last week about, you know, the transition of this offensive line without Chad Wheeler, with Toa going over and playing left tackle. What were we seeing? And you saw us sort of over the last couple of weeks really become a pass-first offense, which I don't think Mike or I necessarily have a problem with. Play to your strengths, do that. We seem to be pass-protecting well. But, boy, in that second half when we decided, you know, this prevent offense we're going to run, we're going to hand the ball off three times and see if we can get our run game going, it was not there. And Cal does not exactly have the most dominating defensive front in football, but we could not run the ball against them well. We did not run the ball against Washington State well. And, you know, it concerns me that we're going to be going into a UCLA game and a Notre Dame game with substantially better defenses than we've played the last couple weeks. And right now I feel like we're a little bit one-dimensional. And if we are, then we ought to own it and pass protect and throw the ball around and make plays and be aggressive in the passing game. You know, it's a concern.
And I think that's valid, Jeremy. Cal and Washington State were in the bottom five in the country in pass defense. Like you say, take what the defense has given you at a certain point. But that's a very good, you know, the fact that Chad Wheeler is not here, this is the offensive line for the last two games. But, okay, let's look ahead and let's see if we're game planning for UCLA right now. If you're putting on your hat for that one, do you just sit there and say what you said, Jeremy? Do you accept it and say, you know what, it is what it is right now with the running game. We're going to have to keep butt going to a certain extent. But we have these passing options. You have Nelson Aguilar, Juju Smith coming along, Darius Rogers getting healthy, George Farmer. I think Stephen Mitchell's coming along nicely. So these are out there. If you're looking ahead to this and you see what the UCLA defense is doing right now, there's enough guys on that Bruin defense. I think they're pretty strong up front. They have some nice linebackers. If you're sitting there designing your game plan, Jeremy, what are you trying to get done?
Yeah, I'm absolutely attacking them and attacking their secondary through the air. And I would like to see us use Nelson in many ways as, I hate to say, a decoy, because I think we'll definitely get the ball to him. But I think there's going to be so much of a focus on UCLA's defense and making sure that they're sliding coverage and doubling Nelson and taking him away. You know, I hope we are looking for to spread the ball around to other guys and, you know, use Buck Allen to keep him honest and use Buck Allen to hopefully get a couple plays in the run game. And suck those linebackers up and make sure that they're playing the run. But I'm absolutely coming after UCLA through the air. There's no doubt about it. I think you got to attack them. And as Mike said, you got to have a game plan for your first half. and then you've got to figure they're going to adjust and try to predict what those adjustments are going to be. And I think you change that up a little bit, but still be attacking in the second half of these games.
I think you need to emulate Kurt Warner in his heyday, whether it was with the St. Louis Rams or the Iowa Barnstormers. You just put this ball up. That's your strength. That's what you are. I think you do have to drop the facade that, well, we're going to run the football, because I don't think it's necessarily something that's going to happen. I mean, it hasn't happened all year long. You're down to your last two games. You've got a makeshift offensive line full of freshmen and young guys. It's just, I just don't think that you're going to sprinkle some, you know, magic pixie dust and they're going to be able to block the guys up front. So, you know, Jeremy said it. I love that term. Own it. You know, that's what you are. You've got a quarterback that, in my opinion, is becoming one of the elite quarterbacks, and he's done so in short order. And if you want to talk about a success story on this team for the coaching staff and for the players, it has been Cody and what he's been able to do and the way that he has been able to utilize this offense, along with, you know, if you look at Juju Smith and where he was and where he is he better? Yeah, he's better. Nelson Agholor, what he did last week was, you know, it was just nothing short of phenomenal. Although, you know, you're taking what you can get. And then I think, you know, you mentioned Darius Rogers and George Farmer. I think that you've got some weapons there that you can utilize. If you bracket Nelson Agholor, you can't bracket the other guys. It's just not something that you can do. So go out, do it, try to run up the scores. I think that's the only way that USC can win this game. They've got to score like 38-45, something like that, and just hope and pray that their defensive line has enough stamina at the end of the game to try to get it together and hold this thing together, because you know, I can see this thing being a shootout. Those guys are going to have to try to come up with some, you know, some kind of a pass rush, and it really hasn't been there at the end of the game for the Trojans.
Let's flip it over to the defensive side of the ball, because to me that matchup is, if I'm looking at this game, that's what I'm highlighting, is the USC defense against, you can call it the UCLA offense, you can just call it Brett Hundley, the USC defense against Hundley. Containing him, this is a good one. He's a good player, there's no doubt about it, and this is the type of quarterback that the USC defense has had troubles with in the past. But Mike, you hit it on the head when you look at the inability to create pressure all season long, basically. I think that has to go out the window, and you mentioned, is there magic pixie dust? I hope there is. And if I'm going to look for encouraging signs, there's been a new unit that they've been going with down on the D-line. Craig Townsend's in there, and Pallone. Yeah. And then I think getting Sua in there, and if Sua is healthy, and having him be able to spy Hundley, if you will, I think there's things they can do. Will they do it, Jeremy?
Well, you mentioned, you know, is this the UCLA offense or is it Brett Hundley? I don't think it's as extreme, because Brett Hundley can certainly throw the ball. But, I mean, it reminds me a little bit of when USC played Texas and Vince Young, where at the end of the day, it really wasn't about stopping the Texas offense. It's about stopping Vince Young. And it seemed like that didn't dawn on us until after the game, where it's almost like, in some ways, don't even rush the guy. Just contain the guy and make sure you don't give him alleys to break free and make plays with his legs. And you sort of feel like if Brett Hundley does not make plays, I'll ask you both. If Brett Hundley doesn't make plays with his legs in this game, does USC win? I think you both probably
take the chances.
Yeah. Your chances with that, right? So the question is sort of, how do you disrupt him, get pressure, while at the same time keeping him from breaking free and making those plays that he made on us last year and that he's made against a lot of the teams through the Pac-12? I don't know that you're going to absolutely shut that down, but Gary, you mentioned some great things. I mean, I think the new rotations, we do get J.R. Tavai back, which I think can maybe be a disruptive force off of the edge. And if Sua is in that package as a spy or however that ends up being, where you can try to contain him a little bit. I mean, there are teams, you know, I don't think that the USC defensive front all year has gotten the types of pressure that Utah or other teams have gotten, but there are teams that have gotten to him and really disrupted that UCLA offense, you know, all throughout the game. We've got to see some of those plays. If we're just seeing sit back and let them get 3-4 yards a pop and all of a sudden get in third and short situations, I mean, Brett Hundley will convert those all game long. We've got to prevent getting in those situations, and we've got to, on the course of drives, make sure we're getting some disruptive plays.
Having watched UCLA this season, their strength is not their offensive line. So it's not like they're going to come in and decide to give the ball to Paul Perkins and he's going to run for 200 yards. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't know that they're necessarily a group that can wear down USC's defensive line either. They're not. I mean, they've gotten better, but they're just not a great offensive line. So when you get back to the Brett Hundley point, and I don't want to have this misconstrued or misunderstood. It's not the worst thing to not have a great pass rush on this guy, because if plays break down, what happens? He takes off and he picks up 45 yards. I mean, it's almost better to kind of rush him in a contained fashion. Stay in your lanes. You know, just make him a little bit uncomfortable where he has to throw the football and maybe drop another guy into coverage. I don't know that you have to get after him and wear him out. And if you have a well-timed blitz from time to time from Sewell, which has been the pattern with this defense, and it comes when there's a tackle for loss, when it's critical, and it can get them off the field, that's really what I think should transpire. I'm not wild about going after Brett Hundley, because I think if you do get to him and there's pressure off the edge, he's going to step up, take off, and that's going to be for big plays. So my thought, my sense would be maybe you're a little bit more conservative with your game plan. I don't want to say bend but don't break and all that stuff, but I think there's a certain element of that that's involved with trying to defend him.
And that's interesting, Mike. I think a lot of Trojan fans would listen to what you're saying and saying, you know, my gosh, no. Yeah, that's what we've been doing all year long. But I think one of the things that's interesting is Sark has talked about with the defensive line and the fact they've been kind of protecting the secondary, if you will, because the group is so young back there. Well, they're not as young anymore. It's the end of the season. You've had a guy in a Dory with the way that he has emerged as a number one guy. Has that dynamic and the way that Gerald Bowman has stepped up, does that impact your thinking in that regard to say, okay, these guys back in the secondary, if it was a, I don't want to call it a weakness at the beginning of the year, it's not so much that case anymore. Does that play into your thinking?
Yeah, I believe that. And if you would have asked me about Kevon Seymour in the first three games, I mean, I just would have shaken my head. But he's a guy that was gone after, was totally tempered and, you know, by the fire, and has figured out a way to compete and start to make plays. And so, yeah, I think that you've got guys that have played, and clearly Adoree is in a class of his own. So now that these guys have played a little bit and it's the end of the season, they look like guys that have got some experience and have figured things out. So I'm much less concerned about those guys making a mistake. I'm much less worried about somebody physically not being in the right spot and not playing something correctly and mentally making an error. I'm not seeing that from the secondary. They're not perfect, but, you know, I'll take the 90 percentile as opposed to the 50 percentile we were seeing at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think if we say that UCLA is going to have to keep Hundley sort of in the pocket, keep him contained, and make them beat us by actually throwing the ball downfield and making plays with his arm. Not that he doesn't have a good arm, not that they don't have the potential to be very good in their passing game, but I don't think they do that consistently through the course of the game and convert drive after drive after drive into points. I think if we can make them a passing team, even against this USC secondary that, like you guys have said, is very different now than it was at the beginning of the season, I like that strategy. You know, I think we get several stops during the course of the game if that's what they're relegated to.
Okay, let's talk about this game in a little more big picture style for Steve Sarkisian. You talk about a situation in his first year as USC head coach. What an ability to make a statement than this opportunity he has on Saturday. I don't think you can understate how important this game is to him and the USC program. It's not his fault that the Bruins have won two in a row over USC, but that's what he inherited. And the thought of losing three in a row, Jeremy, I know you know what that is like, unfortunately, to have a losing streak against the Bruins. It's not fun for anybody. And when you talk about the stakes of what is possible for Steve Sarkisian on Saturday, this is huge for his perception. Jeremy.
Well, this is the measuring stick. I mean, you know, Ed Orgeron last year had an unbelievable run, didn't beat UCLA, didn't beat Notre Dame, and didn't get the job. You know, he probably could lose two other games during that stretch and beat Notre Dame and beat UCLA, and he probably has the job. I mean, it's that important. It is that meaningful to defining your career. You're if you look back at 10-year careers of coaches that are, you know, have 5-year runs, 10-year runs, whatever it might be, the John Robinsons, the Pete Carrolls, anyone, they are measured by national championships and then Rose Bowls and then beating UCLA and Notre Dame. Those are the four things that matter to the Trojan alums and define your history. And this is Steve Sarkisian's first chance as the USC head man to sort of put that stamp on it and to have the opportunity he has here with two games at the end of his inaugural season. You know, he has to absolutely recognize, and there's no doubt he recognizes how important this is. What I hope we see is that, you know, we allude to it sort of during the course of games, but maybe even during the course of a season, is there a special play? Is there a special wrinkle? Is there a special scheme that he and his staff have been looking at, you know, over the course of the off season, over the course of the season, when they sneak away and get to look at tape at UCLA, get to look at tape at Notre Dame? Are we going to see some things where there's an aggressiveness and a really a coaching dynamic that comes into play in these last 2 weeks where you say, wow, great job, Steve Sarkisian, great job to that staff. That one's on them, and they really, you know, that was the difference in the game. I hope we see stuff like that. You'd like to think as a coach that you have that ability to sort of, as you map out your season and plan your season and you get these two games at the end of your year, that you've taken those opportunities to develop something special, have it in your repertoire, have that tool in your tool belt that at the right time during the game, whether it's a special teams play, no, whatever it is, that you pull out and you say, wow, where'd that come from? I hope we see that on Saturday.
These last two games are always defining, and for whatever reason, I can never erase this from my memory bank. Larry Smith, his comment, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, if I got down on my knees and begged them not to play these last two games. You know, it's like, this is why you go there. This is why you want to coach there. This is the situation that you live for. So, you know, it's not an all-in deal, because if Steve were to lose these last two games, I think that people would be upset and the alumni would question the wisdom of Pat Hayden's move, and they would, you know, you brought up Ed Orgeron, they would go, well, wait a minute, he lost two, his record would have been better from last year. So all those conversations are going to come up. But if you win this game, and if you can win the last game, then all that goes away, all of it. You validated yourself. You validated the decision of the athletic director to bring you in as the head coach and everything else that you've done. And I'll give Coach Sarkisian a little bit of a break here, because I don't think that the previous staff's recruiting was exactly what he would have gone after. I don't know if those are his types of guys. But to his credit, and to the staff's credit, they've made it work as best as they can to try to pull it together here. So I don't think you can overstate the gravity of the situation from a perception standpoint of how people are going to look at this guy as a head coach in his first year and the automatic validation of Pat Hayden and his decision to do so. Now, if he loses those, everybody's going to grumble, but if he comes back and pulls it together next year, I don't think it's that big of a deal. Let's not forget, you know, Pete Carroll did not exactly set the woods on fire in his first season as the head coach of USC. So let's not try to judge somebody in 6 months on the job, but it will sure take the heat off, and it'll be a lot more attaboys for Coach Sarkisian if he wins these two games.
Mike, you just brought up a great point. With Pete Carroll, didn't set the world on fire his first year, but what he did his first year was put a 27-0 on UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
And that carried over to the other. And I think that was really the first sign that made people stand up and say, whoa, what do we got here in this guy?
Then would Sean Cody have, 19 sacks in that game? Or,
well, that'll help.
You know, it was something that as fans you were hungry for, and it was really something that everybody could hang on over the rest of the season. So, you know, I get that and understand something else. You know, Pete was a hire that people were kind of raising their eyebrows about. I mean, there are a lot of similarities to the perception of the hire of Pete and the perception of the hire of Steve. And so, you just got to go out there and change that perception that people have. And if you win this game, you just said it, Gary, that's where it starts to turn the tide.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I
okay.
think, you know, you can't underestimate how big of an impact that had for Pete in setting his course on a, from a recruiting standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that Sark is thinking the exact same way. You know, I need this finish to set myself up for the recruiting class that I need to get their first full recruiting class in a long time to really sort of load up the cupboards and prepare myself for the next several years.
Oh, you guys know how important this is, the swing game on the recruiting circuit. When you have 2 years in a row over your rival, if you can now start to point to three, that's not a point that any USC person wants to see UCLA getting on the recruiting trail. So yeah, add yet another thing to this game. Let's end this podcast by going back in the memory bank for you two, and just give me, for a USC-UCLA memory, from when you guys played, what, give me one that stands out. Give me one story that that sums up this rivalry in your mind, Mike Lamb.
I don't have one memory, and it was so back and forth. My freshman year, people were talking about Terry Donahue was going to get fired because we beat them 49-14. Next year, we lost when Jeff Fisher went for the pick. Freeman McNeil goes the other way. The next year after that, Georgia Chica blocks a field goal. And then the next year after that, Carl Morgan gets his sack. You know, it was as back and forth and emotional and snarky as you could possibly imagine a rivalry being. So when I remember this, I do remember the series, and I just remember what was absolutely an emotional roller coaster for everybody that was a part of the team.
Yeah, I mean, my memories with UCLA, Gary, as you know, are not good. I was played during the streak that was on the wrong side, and despite having what we obviously felt, and I still feel, were significantly better teams several years, it never really seemed to matter in this game. And, you know, my senior year is probably the one that sticks with me the most because, you know, the week before we had clinched the Rose Bowl, we knew we were going to the Rose Bowl. We knew we won at the time the Pac-10. We knew we were going to be playing Northwestern. There was really nothing else to play for when we played UCLA other than the fact that we were playing UCLA. And certainly for me, that was more than enough. And for many of the guys, it was more than enough. But for UCLA, it was all they were playing for. And, you know, they came at us and, you know, we didn't play as well as we should have and ended up losing a game. And, I'll never forget going into a volunteer coach at a little clinic at UCLA that off season. You walked into their locker room and there was a banner in their locker room that said City Champs. And I remember feeling like, you know, we just went to the Rose Bowl. We won the Pac-10. You know, we were finished with a much higher national ranking. And all this school really cares about is City Champs. And there's something to be said for that. And this game means a lot for them and always has because their entire program is defined by how they do against USC. Mm-hmm. You know, USC tends to have some bigger aspirations than that, but it is everything for UCLA. This is not one of their rivals. This is their only rival. And, you know, fortunately this year, we're going to be playing for a lot as well. And I don't see us taking this one lightly and letting down at all.
No, it should be a lot of fun on Saturday whenever this game comes around every year. It's
what's your memory, Gary? You know, you've been following this long enough. You've been writing and covering the Trojans. What's your biggest memory?
God, there's so many. 27-0 does stand out in my mind, and always will. Just the unexpectedness of it. You know, to have a domination that much, like you said, it wasn't like Pete was cruising that first year.
Right.
And then to do that one stands out. Oh, you know, God, Marinovich Maddox. What an unbelievable game that was. I was, you know, at that football game and to see Johnny Morton catching that pass. The Georgia Chica game, Mike, that you mentioned. And again, that your teams were the USC teams that I grew up on. And so you are absolutely right. It was that back and forth every year. USC-UCLA came down to the end every year. That's what happened. That's your memory of it. So
to me, that's what will always stick with me. So I just can't wait. Again, there, I don't think there's much better days than USC-UCLA game. When you get up in the morning, you get to the stadium and you see the two teams. I love the two home jerseys again. That is going to be in effect on Saturday. The Trojans will be wearing their home Cardinal. I think that's one of the great traditions in sports. So I can't wait. I can't wait. Going to be a lot of fun. So that's our report here. Looking forward to USC-UCLA week. For Jeremy Hogue and Mike Lamb, this is Gary Paskowitz. You're listening to the We Are SC podcast.